Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver and Dan Novak. Jill Robbins answers a question from an English learner in this week's Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. We hear part one of O. Henry's Hearts and Crosses. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
A rare audio recording of famed artist and peace activist John Lennon is to go on sale in Denmark on Tuesday. The recording has been privately held for 50 years by the people who made it. Like many collectibles, this one has an interesting history. In 1970, four Danish teenagers got to meet privately with British musician and Beatles member John Lennon. They planned to write a story about him for publication in their school's magazine. The boys made a sound recording of the event. Now, 50 years later, the Danes are putting the 33-minute-long recording up for sale. Included with it are 23 pictures taken by the students and a copy of the magazine in which the story appeared. Bidding for the set is to open September 28th at the Danish auction business Brun Rasmussen. The 16-year-olds were not starstruck when they questioned Lennon that January day in the area of Thi. It was the height of the Vietnam War and the Cold War. Lennon and his wife, artist Yoko Ono, were opponents of both conflicts. Karsten Hoyen remembers the two had a message of peace, and that was what was important to us. He recorded the meeting with equipment he borrowed from the local record store. Lennon and Ono talked with the boys about being in Denmark and world peace, Hoyen said. Communities sympathetic to Lennon's message had spread quickly around Denmark beginning in the late 1960s. People came from other countries, and music festivals were organized. Their message was what we came for, Hoyen told the Associated Press. The gathering was friendly and easy. Lennon and Ono had their feet on the table, Hoyen noted. Lennon and Ono were on a private visit to Thi at the time, and they tried to keep it that way. But the local press found out and reported about the presence of the world-famous couple. A press conference was set up, and the 16-year-old students were to attend. But they arrived late. The official press conference was over. The boys had missed it. Instead, they got something better. We knocked on the door, Hoyen recalled. Seconds later, they were sitting next to Lennon and Ono. Hoyen held the microphone, and his friend Jesper Jungersen took pictures. Someone asked Lennon to play the guitar for the boys. He played and, with Ono, sang his song Give Peace a Chance. Then the couple sang a song called Peace Radio. It was made for a radio station in the Netherlands, but was never broadcast, Hoyen said. That unpublished song makes the collection of objects more valuable. The collection is estimated to be worth more than $30,000. The four boys grew up and over time realized that they were sitting on a treasure, Hoyin told AP. I'm Katie Weaver.
Big tech companies that operate around the world have long promised to follow local laws and protect civil rights while doing business. These two aims sometimes conflict. When Apple and Google recently agreed to remove an app at the request of the Russian government, it raised worries. It appears that the companies are more concerned with making money than protecting democratic rights. The app is called Smart Voting. It was a tool for organizing political opposition to Russian President Vladimir Putin before the elections last weekend. The ban has been sharply criticized by supporters of free elections and democracy. Natalia Krapiva is with Access Now, an internet freedom group. This is bad news for democracy and dissent all over the world, she said. We expect to see other dictators copying Russia's tactics. Technology companies that offer services like searches, social media, and apps have long been in conflict with less democratic countries. Apple, Google, and other large companies like Amazon, Microsoft, and Facebook have grown stronger over the past decade. But government efforts in many countries to use that power for their own purposes has also grown. Sasha Mainrath is a professor at Pennsylvania State University and studies online censorship. He said the act was a great symbol of political oppression. He added that Google and Apple have increased the chances of something similar happening again. Neither Apple nor Google answered interview requests from the Associated Press. Google also denied access to documents on its online service, Google Docs, that listed candidates supported by smart voting. YouTube blocked similar videos. One person with knowledge of the matter told AP that Google faced legal action by Russian officials if it failed to remove the app. Russian officials also threatened criminal charges against individual employees, the person said. The person also told AP that Russian police visited Google's Moscow offices last week to enforce a court order to block the app. Google's own employees have reportedly criticized the company's decision to remove the app on employee message boards. Apple has a commitment to human rights on its website. A close read of that statement, however, suggests that when legal government orders and human rights are in conflict, the company will follow the government. We respect national law, the statement reads. A recent report from the organization Freedom House found that worldwide internet freedom decreased for the fifth straight year. Internet freedom is under increasing threat as more nations arrest internet users for political speech. At least 20 countries suspended internet access, and 21 other countries blocked access to social media, the report found. Big tech companies have generally agreed to follow government demands to remove content to continue operating in these countries. Posts by those denying the Holocaust are blocked in Germany and other European countries where they are illegal, for example. And in Russia, opposition parties are censored. The app's removal was widely denounced by Russian opposition politicians. Leonid Volkov is a top advisor to jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny. He wrote on Facebook that the companies bent to the Kremlin's blackmail. One Navalny ally said on Twitter that the politician's team is considering bringing legal action against the two companies. It is possible that the companies could decide to stop operating in Russia. Google made a similar decision in 2010 when it removed its search engine from China. Its communist government had begun censoring search results and videos on YouTube. Kurt Opsell is a lawyer with the digital rights group Electronic Frontier Foundation. If you want to take a principled stand on human rights and freedom of expression, then there are some hard choices you have to make on when you should leave the market, he said. Russia is not a major market for Apple or Google's parent company, Alphabet. I'm Dan Novak.
Hello, this week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Abdulmajid in Uzbekistan. Can you tell me the uses of everyone and everyone? Thanks in advance. Dear Abdulmajid, thank you for writing to us. These words are like some others that can be hard to understand for English learners. Let us begin with everyone. It is a singular pronoun used when we talk about a group of people. Here's an example.
Danny brought enough birthday cake for everyone to eat.
You can use everybody in the same way as everyone. This is a good test of whether everyone is the correct form for your statement. You should always be able to use everybody instead of everyone.
Everybody gave money for Danny's birthday presents.
Now let's discuss everyone. We use this expression to talk about the individuals or individual things in a group. The expression often follows a general statement and comes before the word of. Returning to the birthday party, we can find this example.
Danny got 6 presents, and every one of them made him smile.
Note that we cannot use the singular pronouns everyone or everybody to talk about objects. We only use them for people. But we can use everyone if we want to talk about people or things. For example,
at the end of the party, every one of the guests thanked Danny for inviting them.
That statement tells us that as each guest left, they individually said thank you to Danny. A similar set of words is anyone and anyone. The same rule is true of these. You can use anyone or anybody only for people, and you can use anyone, that is, 2 separate words, for people or objects. Here are examples.
Did anyone lose their keys? I found these on the table. There are 5 cars in the driveway. The keys could be for any one of them.
I hope this helps you understand the difference between everyone and everyone, Abdamajeet. Remember that everyone is for groups of people and everyone is for individual objects or people. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Hearts and Crosses. Baldy Woods reached for a drink and got it. When Baldy wanted something, he usually got it. But this is not Baldy's story. Now he took his third drink, which was larger than the first and the second. Baldy had been listening to the troubles of a friend. Now Baldy was going to tell his friend what to do. So the friend was buying him the drinks. This was the right thing for the friend to do. "I'd be king if I were you," said Baldy. He said it loudly and strongly. Webb Yeager moved his wide hat back on his head. He put his fingers in his yellow hair and moved it about. It now looked wilder than before. But this did not help him to think better. Therefore, he also got another drink.
"If a man marries a queen, it ought not make him nothing," said Webb.
Here was his real problem.
"Surely not," said Baldy. "You ought to be a king, but you're only the queen's husband. That's what happens to a man in Europe if he marries the king's daughter. His wife becomes a queen, but is he a king? No. His only duty is to appear with the queen in pictures and be the father of the next king. That's not right. Yes, Webb, you are only the queen's husband. And if I were you, I'd turn everything upside down and I would be king."
Baldy finished his drink.
"Baldy," said Webb, "you and I have been cowboys together for years. We've been riding the same road since we were very young. I wouldn't talk about my family to anyone but you. You were working on the Nopalito Ranch when I married Santa McAllister. I was foreman then. What am I now? Nothing."
"Well, when old McAllister was cattle king of West Texas," continued Baldy, "you were important. You told people what to do. Your commands were as strong as his."
"That was true," said Webb, "until he discovered that I wanted to marry Santa. Then he sent me as far away from the ranch house as he could. When the old man died, they started to call Santa the cattle queen. Now, I tell the cattle what to do. That's all. She takes care of all the business. She takes care of all the money. I can't sell any cattle, not one animal. Santa is the queen and I'm nothing."
"I would be king if I were you," said Baldy Woods again. "When a man marries a queen, he ought to be the same as she is. Plenty of people think it's strange, Webb. Your words mean nothing on the Nopalito Ranch. Mrs. Yeager is a fine little lady, but a man ought to be the head of his own house."
Webb's brown face grew long with sadness. With that expression in his wild yellow hair and his blue eyes, he looked like a schoolboy who had lost his leadership to another strong boy. Yet his tall body looked too strong for such a thing to happen to him.
"I'm riding back to the ranch today," he said. It was easy to see that he did not want to go. "I have to start some cattle on the road to San Antonio tomorrow morning."
"Well, I'll go with you as far as Dry Lake," said Baldy. The two friends got on their horses and left the little town where they had met that morning. At Dry Lake, they stopped to say goodbye. They had been riding for miles without talking. But in Texas, talk does not often continue steadily. Many things may happen between words. But when you begin to talk again, you're still talking about the same thing. So now Webb added something to the talk that began 10 miles away.
"You remember, Baldy, there was a time when Santa was different. You remember the days when old McAllister kept me away from the ranch house. Remember how she would send me a sign that she wanted to see me? Old McAllister said that he would kill me if I came near enough. You remember the sign she used to send, Baldy? The picture of a heart with a cross inside it?"
"Me?" cried Baldy. "Sure, I remember. Every cowboy on the ranch knew that sign of the heart and the cross. We would see it on things sent out from the ranch. We would see it on anything. It would be on newspapers, on boxes of food. Once I saw it on the back of the shirt of a cook that McAllister sent from the ranch."
"Santa's father made a promise that she wouldn't write to me or send me any word. That heart and cross sign was her plan. When she wanted to see me, she would put that mark on something that she knew I would see. And when I saw it, I traveled fast to the ranch that same night. I would meet her outside the house."
"Now, we all knew it," said Baldy. "But we never said anything. We wanted you to marry Santa. We knew why you had that fast horse. When we saw the heart and the cross on something from the ranch, we always knew your horse was going to go fast that night."
"The last time Santa sent me the sign," said Webb, "was when she was sick. When I saw it, I got on my horse and started. It was a 40-mile ride. She wasn't at our meeting place. I went to the house. Old McAllister met me at the door.
'Did you come here to get killed?' he said. 'I won't kill you this time. I was going to send for you. Santa wants you. Go in that room and see her. Then come out here and see me.'"
Santa was lying in bed very sick, but she smiled and put a hand in mine, and I sat down by the bed, mud and riding clothes and all.
"I could hear you coming for hours, Webb," she said. "I was sure you would come. You saw the sign?"
"I saw it," I said.
"It's our sign," she said. "Hearts and crosses, to love and to suffer. That's what they mean."
And old Dr. Musgrove was there. And Santa goes to sleep, and Dr. Musgrove touches her face, and he says to me,
"You were good for her, but go away now. The little lady will be all right in the morning."
Old McAllister was outside her room. "She's sleeping," I said. "Now you can start killing me. You have plenty of time. I haven't anything to fight with." Old McAllister laughs and says to me,
"Killing the best foreman in West Texas is not good business. I don't know where I could get another good foreman. I don't want you in the family, but I can use you on the Nopalito if you stay away from the ranch house. You go up and sleep. And then we'll talk." The two men prepared to separate. They took each other's hand.
"Bye, Baldy," said Webb. "I'm glad I saw you and had this talk."
With a sudden rush, the two riders were on their way. Then Baldy pulled his horse to a stop and shouted. Webb turned.
"If I were you,"
came Baldy's loud voice,
"I would be king."
At 8 the following morning, Bud Turner got off his horse at the Nopalito Ranch House. Bud was the cowboy who was taking the cattle to San Antonio. Mrs. Yeager was outside the house putting water on some flowers. In many ways, Santa was like her father, King McAllister. She was sure about everything. She was afraid of nothing. She was proud. But Santa looked like her mother. She had a strong body and a soft prettiness. Because she was a woman, her manners were womanly. But she liked to be queen, as her father had liked to be king. Webb stood near her, giving orders to two or three cowboys. "Good morning," said Bud. "Where do you want the cattle to go? To Barber's, as usual?" The queen always answered such a question. All the business, buying, selling, and banking, had been held in her hands. Care of the cattle was given to her husband. When King McAllister was alive, Santa was his secretary and his helper. She had continued her work, and her work had been successful. But before she could answer, the queen's husband spoke.
"You drive those cattle to Zimmerman's and Nesbitt's. I spoke to Zimmerman about it."
Bud turned, ready to go.
"Wait," called Santa quickly.
She looked at her husband with surprise in her gray eyes.
"What do you mean, Webb?"
she asked.
"I never deal with Zimmerman and Nesbitt. Barber has bought all the cattle from this ranch for 5 years. I'm not going to change."
She said to Bud Turner,
"Take those cattle to Barber."
Bud did not look at either of them. He stood there waiting.
"I want those cattle to go to Zimmerman and Nesbitt," said Webb.
There was a cold light in his blue eyes.
"It's time to start," said Santa to Bud. "Tell Barber we'll have more cattle ready in about a month."
Bud allowed his eyes to turn and meet Webb's.
"You take those cattle," said Webb,
"to Barber,"
said Santa quickly.
"Let's say no more about it. What are you waiting for, Bud?"
"Nothing," said Bud. But he did not hurry to move away, for man is man's friend, and he did not like what had happened.
"You heard what she said," cried Webb. "We do what she commands."
He took off his hat and made a wide movement with it, touching the floor.
"Webb,"
said Santa,
"what's wrong with you today?"
"I'm acting like the queen's fool," said Webb. "What can you expect? Let me tell you, I was a man before I married a cattle queen. What am I now? Something for the cowboys to laugh at. But I'm going to be a man again."
Santa looked at him.
"Be reasonable, Webb," she said quietly. "There's nothing wrong. You take care of the cattle, I take care of the business. You understand the cattle. I understand the business better than you do. I learned it from my father."
"I don't like kings and queens," said Webb, "unless I'm one of them myself." "All right, it's your ranch. Barber gets the cattle."
Webb's horse was tied near the house. He walked into the house and brought out the supplies he took on long rides. These he began to tie on his horse. Santa followed him. Her face had lost some of its color. Webb got on his horse. There was no expression on his face except a strange light burning in his eyes.
"There's some cattle at the Hondo waterhole," he said. "They ought to be moved. Wild animals have killed three of them. I did not remember to tell Sims to do it. You tell him."
Santa put a hand on the horse and looked her husband in the eye.
"Are you going to leave me, Webb?"
she asked quietly.
"I'm going to be a man again," he answered.
"I wish you success,"
she said with a sudden coldness. She turned and walked into the house. Webb Yeager went to the southeast as straight as he could ride. And when he came to the place where the sky and the earth seemed to meet, he was gone. Those at the Nopalito knew nothing more about him. Days passed, then weeks, then months. But Webb Yeager did not return.
And that's our program for today.
Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.